in our life that should be fixed, the first step is to get started and to do something. We cannot just sit back, make no effort, and do not get involved, and then expect that problem be solved by itself. It is impossible. And this expectation is against the law of the universe. Because of this, we see that if someone is ill, he has to go to the doctor. If someone wants to learn something, he has to study. Or for gaining money, we need to work. For being an athlete, we have to work out hard, and so on and so forth. When this is the general principle of this world, we realize that just sitting back and praying is not enough. Next to praying and requesting Allah, we have to do something. Back to the title of today's discussion, in many occasions we see that we cannot deal with our problem. We are not able to solve our problems by ourselves. In fact, we need the help of other people to cope with our problems. Sometimes we suffer from financial shortage and we need loan or financial assistance. Sometimes we suffer from severe stress and we need someone to comfort us and bring back calmness to our troubled mind. Sometimes we need a piece of advice and want someone who has enough knowledge in that field give us a share of his knowledge. In these critical situations, only collective aids can be useful, and people often cannot achieve results by themselves. Unfortunately, some people think that in such cases, God himself must fulfill the needs of his servants. These people mistakenly think that why should they help the needy instead of God? When God is there, why others should bother themselves to take care of the needy people? This attitude is absolutely wrong. These people who have this assumption neglect the basic rule of this world. The rule that I mentioned already, that we people should solve our problem and the problem of each other by doing something. In fact, most of our needs are solved by mutual help. For example, a baker fulfills people's need for bread by baking bread. A doctor meets the need of patients by healing them. A mechanic solves people's need for their car by repairing their car. A builder and an architect fulfills the need of others by helping them to build a house. Do we just want God to solve their problems? Of course not. So for solving other problems, we also have to do something. Let's go for a short break and I will be back soon. I was talking about the importance of helping the needy people. Unlike heaven in the day of judgment that the pious will enter, this world is a place where we have to work hard and we shouldn't expect problems to be solved by themselves. Yes, in heaven everything is available without a struggle. But the law of this world is contrary to the law of the heaven. If there is a needy person, we have to help him, just as we expect others to help us if we are in need. Allah in the Quran, in chapter Yasin, verse 47, rejects the assumption of those who think Allah himself should solve the problem of people, and says, وَإِذَا غِيلَ لَهُمْ أَنْفِقُوا مِمَّا رَزَقَكُمُ اللَّهِ. And when it is said to the disbelievers, spend out of what Allah has provided for you as sustenance, قال الذين كفروا للذين آمنوا Those who disbelieve say to those who believe أنطعم من لو يشاء الله أطعمه Shall we feed those whom if Allah wants to help them He could himself feed them? Then as we see Allah rejects this assumption. Let's refer to what Imam Ali says in this regard. He says in Nahj al-Balagha, one of the expiations for major sins is helping the poor and oppressed people and comforting the sad ones. Imam Sadiq also says in a similar narration, من أعان مؤمنا نفس الله عز وجل عنه ثلاثا وسبعين كربة. Whoever helps a believing person, God Almighty will remove many sorrows from him. كربة واحدة في الدنيا وثنتين وسبعين كربة عند كربة العظمى. One in this world and much more sorrows at the time of great sorrow, meaning the day of the resurrection, that Allah on that day will remove many sorrows from someone who helped a person in this world. When we help a person who is in need, God, who is the most merciful of all, gives us help much more. For this reason, if we are also in trouble, God will turn the hearts of others towards us and so that they also will rush to help us. And if this does not happen in this world, or problem is not solved in this world, God will make it up for us on the Day of Judgment. It is stated in several traditions that removing the grief for someone who is suffering from grief will cause God to remove the grief from us on the Day of Judgment. If we show mercy to others, we are never more kind than God. We are never more merciful than Allah. As a result, because of the mercy we have given to others, God tastes His kindness to us in much more greater amount when we are in need. Even with a deeper vision, if we help others, it is actually God's help that has made our hearts inclined to help others. In fact, just as God has given us various blessings, such as the blessing of sun, such as the blessing of life, housing, water, and food, we should also be kind to others and share them with the blessings we have. If we do this and help others, God will increase His blessing on us, and He will consider a special help for us on the Day of Resurrection, the day that we are really in need of even a minute help. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, He knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand, He knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash, He knows. Every thought I have and every word I share, He knows.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to yet another episode of Islamic Upbringing. Well, in this program, we answer the questions that you have related to the Islamic upbringing of your children. The answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations from Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his purified family. Well, today in our studio, we have had the pleasure to invite Professor Salman Nakavi, who is a faculty member at the Al-Mustafa University. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, sir.
Thank you very much.
So, Professor, today we would want to start with a question. Here's a mother who says, whenever I advise something to my teenager, he feels like I am all concerned about myself rather than him. How can I change this situation?
So, number one, it's your own realization and understanding that your attitude is important, that what you feel about what you want your child to do. The advice that you're giving him, are you really concerned about him or her, or are you concerned about yourself and your own reputation and prestige maybe?
Yeah.
So the number one, the attitude through which you present your thoughts and your advice is going to have a bearing upon the child. He, from your body language, or she, from your body language, or the tone in which you talk to him or her about it, will reflect that attitude. And he or she may even mistakenly make this observation in his or her mind, that it is all about yourself, not him or her. So that is important. And that is also the tone, the body language, which reflects your own intentions. So we need to, number one, be very sure of ourselves, that when we're talking about something and advising our children about something, it should be really for the sake of their betterment, and yeah, not as an issue which is of concern to you because it's irritating you. Their behavior, yes, it may irritate us, but we should go beyond that and above that, and we should make them realize that it's not about me or my feelings, it's about your future dealings in society. And if you need to, and you need to rectify, you need to correct your behavior, not that it is, for example, hurting me, it is, but it is more because of you. You need to make them realize that the advice you're giving is for their better future, is for them to be able to deal better in society, in their relationships with other human beings.
Right. So you got to be kind of showing them that the behavior you're showing to them, the things that you want them to change, rather than it's giving you some prestige, it's more of their importance. It's something that's going to give them more importance in the society tomorrow. It's going to help them how to deal in public tomorrow.
Yes, and it's not that you're challenging them. You're not competing with them. You're not a competitor with them. It's not that you say, look, I behave in such a way and you're doing this or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There shouldn't be, you're not going to show them and express to them or make them feel that you're competing with them and you want them to become like yourself maybe or whatever. No, it's a matter of you're not challenging them, so therefore you will not have a conflict with them, you will not quarrel with them, you will not try to bring your point of view home to them and make them accept it without any understanding, without any reasoning, without any logic.
Yeah.
So they need, especially teenagers, need the logic behind things. So you need to talk to them in these terms that this is something which is good in itself. It's not because I'm saying so. Irrespective of the fact, whoever says it, and in whatever terms, in whatever tones it is expressed, our children and human beings as a whole should be, as Mawla Ali al-Islam said, look at what the person is saying,
and don't look at who
is saying it.
All right, that's very nice.
And I should add, even how he's saying it.
Exactly. Professor, we'll discuss more with you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing, and Professor Salman Akhavi is helping us with important tips of upbringing, especially when it comes to advising children. And when children feel like parents are all concerned about their own prestige rather than theirs when they are advising them. Professor, you said that Imam Ali al-Islam teaches us we should look at what is being said rather than who is saying it. And
words of wisdom,
yeah,
can come for people who may not even, for example, be very much learned or educated.
Yeah.
In our sense, in the sense that we think of them to be learned or educated, or those people, people of the older generations, especially who have a great deal of experience in their lives, they've gained a lot of experience. Their words are words of gold. Sometimes, especially today's kids, maybe ourselves also, when we looked upon our grandparents, we would say, look, they're outdated people. What do they know about life? What do they know about the world today?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, their experience spans over decades.
So you're saying words of wisdom can come from anyone?
Yes, we see that.
But what world is teaching us today, or the way world is going, especially the social media world is taking us, it's showing that it's kind of like as if words of wisdom can only come from the educated people, while as you're saying, words of wisdom can come from anyone, be that old person, be that an educated person, be that an uneducated person. What is important, like, don't look at who is saying.
Yes.
Rather, it's important, look at what is being said.
What is being said.
Yeah.
Al-hikmah dhallatul mu'min. This is one of the sayings we have from the Imams or the Holy Prophet, that he says that wisdom is the thing which has been lost by the mu'mins.
Yeah.
It's something which he's looking for, seeking. It's something which he has not found yet, and he's seeking it, and he should be able to find it. Whenever he finds it and wherever he finds it, he should accept it. Therefore, when we talk about the hadith, this famous hadith of the Holy Prophet, when he says, "Utlubul ilm walaw bis-seen," if you want to gain knowledge, you should also travel to China for that. Now, China at that time wasn't a place where religion had been revealed, but it was an old society. It was a civilization. They had many sages. They had many people who had a vast deal of experiences. So they had a great deal of knowledge and wisdom.
Yeah.
So a mu'min, a faithful person, a believing person should be able to go out and seek knowledge and wisdom from wherever he or she can find it. So if we are able to inculcate this understanding, this rational, pure understanding in our children, that we need to find the truth and the rationality in the words spoken by anyone. Doesn't matter who the person is, doesn't matter how he's saying it. He may be saying it in a very...
Maybe some tone that is not... That I don't find very good.
It may be a rude way, but the words have to be taken into account.
Exactly.
What do they imply?
To rethink what was being said. Perhaps we will discuss more with you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
The Prophet صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم said, Honor your children and teach them good manners.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We are with Professor Salman Akavi, and Professor is helping us how we as parents can behave in a way or advise our children in a way that they do not feel offended or they do not feel like we only care about our own prestige, not about them. Well, Professor Imam Ali Alayhi Salam says a very beautiful thing, that if you want to advise someone, advise him separately. Do not advise him in public, or do not advise that person in front of others, because if you're going to do that, that's going to ruin him rather than that's going to make up the things. What's your take on that?
The dignity of a human being, the reputation of a human being is more sacred than even anything else, and even more than the Holy Kaaba. So we need to understand that the reputation of a human being, especially a believer, a faithful person, is so important. Now, sometimes there comes a situation where you need to carry out act upon the command of Allah Almighty, Amr al-Ma'ruf wa Nahy al-Munkar. We have been commanded by Allah Almighty to carry out this Amr al-Ma'ruf wa Nahy al-Munkar, commanding towards good deeds, ordering people towards good deeds, and forbidding them from evil deeds. And this is something which has to be inculcated from the beginning in our children, that they carry out this very important duty. It is more important than even any other liturgical worship, because it is there that this important institution, this important behavior in society is something, if it is carried out, then all of Islamic teachings will be implemented. And if it is not carried out, all of the Islamic teachings will be, will fall down onto the ground. So I'm commanding, forbidding good deeds and forbidding evil deeds. This is an important thing. Now, there are different situations where sometimes you need to confront a person in public because the wrong thing which he is doing is something he will not desist from and refrain from till he is shown something or shown concern and discontent in public. He will only stop. But if it can be done in private, and before it is done in public, the first stage would be to talk to him and advise him and command him to refrain from doing the wrong things and taking care of the right things. That should be the normal practice. But if that is not effective, then one goes to the next stage.
Okay, we'll be talking about further stages in another session. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
In the limelight.
In the 2020 presidential election, former U.S. President Donald Trump was able to challenge President Joe Biden to a large extent in terms of economic indicators. In other words, the economy became the weak point of Biden and the Democrats. Now, there are signs that their continuation could make it difficult for Biden or any other Democratic Party candidate in the 2024 presidential election. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at some world media for further details. Please stay with us to hear more about this story. The Financial Times reports the Federal Reserve warned that the latest banking turmoil could trigger a broad credit crunch that threatens to slow the U.S. economy, while central bank lenders said they plan to tighten lending standards amid concerns about loan losses and deposit flight. Two separate Fed releases on Monday, May 8, highlighted growing concerns that the collapses of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank in March and recent collapse of the First Republic will lead to a contraction in lending and push asset prices lower. The U.S. Federal Reserve said in its semi-annual financial stability report that despite decision action by regulators and officials to deal with recent regional banking crises, concerns about the economic outlook, credit quality, and funding liquidity could mean that banks and other financial institutions to further contract the supply of credit to the economy. The Fed added, a sharp decline in the availability of credit would raise the cost of financing for businesses and households, potentially leading to a slowdown in economic activity. The possibility of a credit crunch was cited as one of the top current risks to the financial system, rather than the Fed's most likely scenario. But it reflected concerns about the macroeconomic impact of one of the most turbulent months in American finance since 2008 global financial crisis. Fears of a credit crunch come as a potential U.S. debt default looms, while the White House and Congress are locked in an impasse over increasing the government's $31.4 trillion credit limit. As part of its stability report, the Fed surveyed market experts and academics. The stock, which ranks stress in the banking sector as top threat to stability, has quadrupled since the fall and is now on par with inflation and U.S.-China tensions. According to this survey, concerns about commercial and residential real estate are also increasing rapidly. The Fed also released the results of its quarterly opinion poll of senior loan officers on Monday, May 8, which showed banks expect to tighten lending standards for the remainder of 2023. Bank officials pointed to concerns about a recession and withdrawals from deposits following the collapse of the SVB. The Fed said in the survey, medium-sized compared to the largest banks with between $50 billion and $250 billion in assets, and other banks more frequently cited concerns about their liquidity positions, deposit outflows, and funding costs as reasons for tightening. In order to retain depositors, some banks have had to offer higher yields on savings accounts, which weighed on profit margins. Mid-sized banks, which face the largest outflows of deposits, also fear tighter regulations and possible changes in accounting rules. Regarding how a possible credit crunch could spread more broadly, the Fed's Financial Stability Report said there was a risk of falling profits and rising corporate defaults. It added furthermore, a related reduction in investor risk appetite could lead to a significant fall in asset prices. The Fed also warned of weakness in the commercial real estate sector, saying the magnitude of a correction in real estate values could be significant and therefore lead to credit losses for CRE debt holders. The central bank said it will also monitor developments in commercial real estate loans more closely and expand screening procedures for banks with a greater focus on this sector. Meanwhile, Agence France-Presse writes, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has warned of an emerging financial catastrophe, once again raising the alarm about the failure of lawmakers to timely approve the rising of the government's monumental debt ceiling. Yellen said on Sunday, May 7th, Congress's failure to act upon the debt ceiling could trigger a constitutional crisis that also would call into question the federal government's credit worthiness, calling on lawmakers from both dominant political parties to make sure that Congress does its job and readily approves the U.S. government's budget bill. She underlined, it's Congress' job to do this. Reiterating, if they fail to do it, we will have an economic and financial catastrophe that will be of our own making. And there is no action that President Joe Biden and the U.S. Treasury can take to prevent that catastrophe. Yellen further on the line, our priority is to make sure that Congress does its job. There is no way to protect our financial system in our economy other in Congress doing its job and raising the debt ceiling and enabling us to pay our bills. This would be a constitutional crisis. Yellen had previously stressed that it was the basic responsibility of Congress to increase or suspend the whopping $31.4 trillion borrowing cap set for the government without delay. After the January due date had expired, the U.S. Treasury chief told lawmakers in February that the government will likely run out of money in June and most likely be unable to issue payments to its employees, the military's family, seniors, and others dependent on the government. However, Republican lawmakers have linked an increase to the government's debt ceiling to its slashing of public spending. Republican House Majority Leader Steve Scalise of Louisiana insisted in a recent interview that passage of debt ceiling would require Biden and other Democrats to change the entire dynamic of the process, thus putting pressure on them to better engage in negotiations with Republican lawmakers.
This is A to Z. An introduction to an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, how to bear difficulties of life. In the name of God, the Most Gracious, the Most Merciful, may His peace and blessings be upon Muhammad and His pure, immaculate Ahlul Bayt. Salamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. You are listening to A2Z and Islamic Lifestyle, IRB English Radio, Call of Islam page. I'm Farhad, your host, and I'm very honored to have you with me for this program. We are going to start our program today with a question. And that is, please advise me how to bear the difficulties of life. I feel like I am about to perish. Very important question. To answer this question, I should say, imagining oneself as about to perish is in itself the beginning of perishment. So first, keep this thought away from your mind and then ask yourself, if you will not bear the difficulties, then what would you do? Do you have a better alternative? So ponder on this question and be certain that life is difficult for all people, but the difficulties differ from one person to another. And now we are going to study together some advices and principles we can gain them through Quran and Hadiths. First, you should know that the worldly life has been full of difficulties since our father Adam alayhi salam, and will be on to the last one of his children. The wise creator has determined life to be difficult for man, so that he may think of the afterlife and that he has been created for. Without being tired, man will not be given the eternal blessings of afterlife. Secondly, to bear the difficulties of life, you need to read the biographies of the patient and great people and see how they passed the difficulties of life to live in the bliss of paradise, and their names were not forgotten throughout the ages. Welcome back, dear brothers and sisters. You are listening to A to Z on Islamic Lifestyle, IRB English Radio, Call of Islam page. And we were talking about the ways of tolerating and bearing the difficulties of life. And we studied together two of them. But let's go through the other principles we can gain them through Quran and Hadiths. Number three is that you should make friends with those possessing a great deal of patience and tolerance. Making friends with such people and such friends will make us to tolerate and bear the difficulties easier in our life. And number four, we need to practice supportive exercises in the morning or at any other time of the day. And it's very recommended this hour. It's interesting, but it's very recommended in our religion to do this kind of exercises during the day or any time which is possible. And rely on Allah and believe that He is the strongest supporter for those who rely on Him. And number six, ponder over the Quranic verses and traditions of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam that discuss patience, for they have undoubtedly taught us what makes us happy. For example, Imam al-Baqir alayhi salatu wasalam said, when Ali ibn al-Husayn, Imam Zainul Abidin, his father, was about to die, he embarrassed me and said, "Oh my son, I recommend you to what my father had recommended to me when he was about to die, and he said that his father had recommended him too. Oh, my son, be patient with the truth, even if it is bitter." We must submit to the truth and its requirements. Abu Abdullah alayhi salatu wasalam, Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, has said, "Whoever keeps to the firmest handhold will be safe." And narrator of this hadith asked, "What is the firmest handhold, Ibn Rasulullah?" He said, "Submission." Someone asked Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, "With what is a believer known as a believer?" Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam said, with submission to Allah and being satisfied with what he gets of pleasure and displeasure. And this is the key. Submission is the only key and the most important key of bearing difficulties throughout the life, inshallah. So I hope everyone alive adorned with submission to Allah, inshallah. Thank you for staying with us.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to IRIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The media reported the end of the fateful meeting of the Council of Foreign Ministers of the Arab League in Cairo and their agreement with the return of Syria to this league after 12 years. Considering the fact that the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has not given any concessions to return to the Arab League, some media outlets ironically wrote the Arab League returned to Syria. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at some world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned. The English website of Al Jazeera writes, the Arab League, a 22-member intergovernmental organization of Arab states, on Sunday, May 7th, agreed to welcome Syria back into the fold with immediate effect after more than a decade. Media reports said the decision was made by Arab foreign ministers during a closed-door meeting in the Egyptian capital Cairo on Sunday, defying diktats issued by the U.S. and some of its allies. An Egyptian diplomat said that the return was conditional, adding that Syria's full membership of the Arab League was dependent on the return of Syrian refugees without retributions and a credible political process in the country. Earlier, the Lebanese foreign minister attached great importance to Syria's return to the Arab League, saying his country supports the process. Lebanon's online newspaper Al-Nashra reported on Sunday, May 7th, Abdullah Bou Habib made the remarks before leaving Beirut for Cairo to attend the meeting of top Arab diplomats. Bou Habib also said that Lebanon has submitted proposals to the Arab League regarding Syria's return to the Arab fold. Saudi Arabia reported that permanent representatives at the Arab League Council supported Syria's return to the pan-Arab body during a meeting on Saturday, May 6, citing an unnamed diplomat source. The Saudi daily Okan said Saturday's meeting saw overwhelming support for resumption of Syria's participation in the Arab League meetings. On Friday, May 5th, Jordanian Foreign Minister Ayman Safadi told CNN that there are enough votes among Arab League members for Syria to return to the organization. He added the Arab world is now taking the lead on resolving the Syria crisis, as there was no effective effort so far to do so. Safadi noted the return to the league will happen. Symbolically, it will be important, but that is only a very humble beginning of what will be a very long and difficult and challenging process, given the complexity of the crisis after 12 years of conflict. Since March 2011, Syria has been gripped by a campaign of militancy and destruction sponsored by the U.S. and its allies. However, in recent years, Syrian government forces, backed by Russia and Iran, have managed to win back control of almost all regions from terrorist groups. The Arab League suspended the membership of Syria, one of the organization's founding members, in November 2011, citing an alleged crackdown by Damascus on so-called opposition protests. Syria denounced the move as illegal and a violation of the organization's charter. In recent months, an increasing number of countries and political parties have called for the reversal of Syria's suspension from the Arab League. Meanwhile, Syria's official Sana news agency reports the Arab country's Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Expatriates has welcomed the decision by the Arab League to bring Damascus back to its fold, stressing the importance of dialogue and joint action to confront the challenges facing the Arab world. In a statement issued on Sunday, May 7th, the ministry said Syria welcomed the decision issued during the extraordinary session of the Council of the League of Arab States regarding the resumption of the Syrian delegation's participation in the meetings of the League and all its affiliated organizations and agencies. It added Syria stresses in the same context the importance of dialogue and joint action to confront the challenges facing Arab countries. The ministry reaffirmed Syria's commitment to strengthening joint Arab work and cooperation, emphasizing that the next stage requires an effective and constructive approach at the bilateral and collective levels based on dialogue, mutual respect, and common interest. Earlier on Sunday, May 7th, a spokesperson for the Arab League said the decision to reinstate Syria's membership after its suspension 12 years ago will consolidate a regional push to normalize ties with the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, and the country could immediately resume its participation in meetings of Arab League and all its organizations and agencies. It also called for a resolution of the crisis resulting from Syria's conflict, including the flight of refugees to neighboring states and drug smuggling across the region. Arab League Secretary General Ahmad Abulghaith said recently that President Assad can attend an Arab League summit in Saudi Arabia later this month if he wishes to. Responding to a question over whether Assad could participate in the summit, Abulghaith told a news conference in Cairo, "If he wishes, because Syria, starting from this evening, is a full member of the Arab League, and from tomorrow morning, they have the right to occupy any seat." He added, when the invitation is sent by the hosting country, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, and if he wishes to participate, he will participate. Some Arab states, including the United Arab Emirates, pushed for Syria's readmission, but others, such as Qatar, remain largely opposed. to full normalization without a political solution to the Syrian conflict. The Arab foreign ministers on Sunday said that Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Lebanon, Egypt, and the Arab League Secretary General would form a ministerial contract group to liaise with the Syrian government and seek a step-by-step solutions to the crisis. Meanwhile, the website of Press TV wrote, Iran has welcomed Syria's return to the Arab League more than a decade after its membership was suspended by the 22-member regional organization. Foreign Ministry spokesperson Nasser Kanani said in a statement on Monday morning, May 8, settlement of disputes among Muslim countries as well as convergence and synergy among them will deliver favorable results for collective stability and peace and will pave the way for reducing foreign profit-seeking interferences in regional affairs. He added, the Islamic Republic of Iran welcomes such an approach. The Palestinian Hamas resistance movement also welcomed the announcement of Syria's return to the Arab League. Hazem Qasem, spokesperson for the Gaza's base group, said, we welcome the decision by foreign ministers of Arab countries to reinstate Syria's membership in the Arab League. He added, we hope all repercussions of the Syrian crisis will be addressed as soon as possible. The Hamas spokesperson also called for stronger interactions among all components of the Muslim world in order to further consolidate their position in the face of trans-regional colonial ambitions, the foremost of which is the expansionist Zionist scheme. Russia also hailed the decision to reinstate its ally Syria membership to the Arab League. Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova said on Sunday, May 7th, we think that the decision of the Council of Arab League foreign ministers has demonstrated the Arab countries' aspiration to bolster coordination of actions in the interests of settling pertinent regional and international issues and confirmed their intent to continue conducting their independent policy on the global stage based on their core interests in the future.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ideal University Student brings change in thinking and reality of the society and world. The following is part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution in a meeting with university students and representatives of student associations in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on April 18th, 2023. The subject of freedom is one of the foundations in understanding that has been spoken about in Islam. The subject of justice is one of the most important issues in understanding. These matters need to be solved. Our young university students should think about these things. They need to work on them until they attain depth. You need to read books, read the Nahjul Balagha, ponder over the verses of the Qur'an when it is recited. Now, consider justice as an example. Of course, an important example of justice is the elimination of economic and social inequalities and the like. But this is not the only thing. It is one of its major features. Justice begins from our personal judgments. Justice begins with our personal actions, our words, and our judgments about other people and about work. The Holy Quran says, "And ill feeling for a people should never lead you to be unfair. Be fair." The Holy Quran, Surah 5, verse 8.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Even if we disagree with someone, if we feel an enmity towards them, or if we don't think in the same manner, we should not be cruel towards them. The most tragic thing that can happen is if an unbeliever grabs me by the collar on Judgment Day, saying, "Sir, you oppressed me in such and such a place." There really is nothing more difficult than that. Or if one of God's enemies has a right on me, and they grab me by the collar on Judgment Day, telling me that I have wronged them. Justice is like this. About international justice, this fight against the arrogant powers, which I keep repeating, is one of the most important examples of justice. Some people seek justice, but they don't believe that the fight against the arrogant powers, the US and Zionism, are also examples of seeking justice. But they are. This is how it is. Freedom. Freedom is very important. The most important part of the theory of freedom in Islam is freedom from this framework of matter. The materialistic viewpoint says that you were born one day, you will live for a few years, and then you will stop existing. We are all doomed to perish. They will give you some types of freedom in this material cage, such as the freedom of lust, the freedom of anger, and freedom for oppression, all kinds of freedom. But that is not freedom.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Pakistan's Supreme Court has ruled that the arrest of the former Prime Minister Imran Khan was illegal, ordering his immediate release and asking the government to ensure his security. The court also urged the ex-premier to condemn the violent protests and emphasized that court's primary responsibility is to protect the citizens of the country. The country's top judge, in his short verdict, said that Khan would be kept in the police headquarters till his next appearance before the High Court on Friday over safety concerns. Khan was arrested by Pakistan's security forces on Tuesday over corruption allegations. The ruling Pakistan Muslim League Nawaz has criticized the country's Supreme Court for setting Imran Khan free, calling him a criminal.
The Supreme Court has double standards toward the government and Imran Khan. It has ruled that Khan, who is accused of corruption, should be provided with all facilities and be able to meet people freely. It would send a message that the courts are willing to compromise on justice. My only question is why the court has double standard.
The angry supporters of Imran Khan welcomed the Supreme Court decision, saying the release of their leader actually upholds the rule of law in the country.
Supreme Court of Pakistan ka shukr ada.
We are thankful to the Supreme Court for releasing Imran Khan from illegal detention by the government. The recent verdict of the top court will be considered as the supremacy of the rule of law in the country, which was violated by the current regime.
After being released by the court, the former PM expressed his grievances about his arrest, stating that he was abducted illegally and tortured during custody. Khan urged followers of his party to end their protests